Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Reuters ran a story naming, at least quoting several sources, saying that according to them, the plan includes offsets of around 50% or more of the small refinery exemptions going back to larger refineries. That would be significant, but we're hearing that it may be as high as 75%. We'll see when the actual guidelines come out.
That's Arlen Suderman with StoneX. You know, ethanol production pulled back in mid-March, signaling softer near-term demand, while rising inventories add pressure on margins and corn use expectations. EIA data shows production dropped nearly 3% to 1.09 million barrels per day. That was a six-week low. Four-week average also eased to just over 17 billion gallons annually. At the same time, ethanol stocks increased 3.2% to the highest level since April of last year. Now, in the longer term, Texas A&M AgriLife economist Dr. Mark Welch notes that ethanol demand remains tied to the policy and fuel trends. So corn used for fuel has grown to about 5.6 billion bushels. That's roughly one-third of total production. But declining gasoline use could put pressure on demand. He says expanding that year-round E15 could offset that, potentially adding up to 2 billion bushels of corn demand by 2030 if adoption will accelerate. Well, global trade growth expected to slow this year with rising energy costs and disruptions in the Middle East, adding new uncertainty for U.S. ag and export markets. World Trade Organization forecasting merchandise trade growth of 1.9%, down from 4.6% last year. It could fall further if energy prices remain elevated. Now, disruptions in the Strait of Hormuz affecting fertilizer flows, roughly one-third of global fertilizer exports typically moving through that region, but higher input costs and transport disruptions could tighten margins for U.S. producers while also raising production costs for key competitors like Brazil and India. But elevated energy prices and supply chain disruptions actually may support export opportunities if competing regions face tighter fertilizer supplies and higher production costs. However, it's the higher fuel and freight costs that could also pressure U.S. export competitiveness. Well, long-term borrowing costs at the farm gate expected to remain elevated this year, shaping financing decisions for land, equipment, and expansion. Matt Erickson with Terrain says inflation expectations, a higher neutral policy rate, and an elevated term premium are keeping the long-term treasury yields, which is a key benchmark for farm lending, from declining significantly. But he says at the same time, the Federal Reserve's gradual easing expected to lower the short-term rates only modestly. U.S. ag trade deficit expected to shrink this year, but the latest USDA outlook shows the sector remains far from returning to that decades-long export surplus that historically supported farm profitability. So while export demand is stabilizing in some sectors, strong import growth and global condition continue to weigh on the balance of trade. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
That is certainly a farmer survey, and it's the first full farmer survey of the year.
Rich Nelson is chief strategist with Allendale on USDA's March Prospective Plantings Report.
Now, we have heard numbers from USDA officials before, in fact, in February at their Ag Outlook Forum, but that's their personal opinion. Really, the first discussion point for our brand new year, it starts with this end-of-the-month report from USDA covering planted acreage of all crops across the nation here.
For 25 years, Allendale has done their own planting survey. What does Nelson see?
So, like I said before, we've always done this long-running August yield survey, which gets a lot of interest. And for the past 25 years now, we've also conducted a March acreage survey. And this one is conducted pretty much as close as we can to modeling it to what USDA does themselves. So this is a survey of farmers in the first 2 weeks of March. And for ourselves, we do this mostly with customers, and this is in either direct conversations by phone, text, email, or filling out some forms on the web. So either way, we do a large effort in order to try to get as much coverage across the U.S. as possible. Now, for this year's discussion, we covered 26 separate states. And as far as our discussion topics here, we cover corn, soybeans, and the main three discussion points here for wheat as well for the survey.
We've seen some changes in prices and input costs could be driving some decisions.
It certainly does. And many of the challenges which you highlighted, they've been in play and in front and center to producers' minds here for quite some time. And certainly, this does explain why we're discussing just the general story for this 2026 acreage movement. So moving away from corn and into soybeans, the question, especially with these type of surveys done in the first 2 weeks of March, is are we updating this point of view? And certainly for this discussion point for the past 2 weeks, especially with the past week being heavily focused on fertilizer costs, we're hoping to get a good idea on whether producers are maybe perhaps even exaggerating their prior view of moving from corn to soybean. So that's certainly one key issue, which we've hoped at least to try to answer with this with the survey.
Any surprises?
So number one, we knew that, of course, there's going to be this shift from corn to soybeans. The question is how much? And the question is also where? Let's discuss the where part of that first. It is very clear that the Western Corn Belt is the ones making the major movements. And excluding North Dakota from our conversation, looks like South Dakota all the way down through Kansas. These are the key areas which are making some clear changes on this general approach. So as far as the discussion on corn, 93.7 million acres. That is below USDA's prior view from February, 94. So this does represent a 5.1 million acre decline. Soybean acres in this case increasing 4.4 million to now a level of 85.7. Keep in mind that is over USDA's prior view from February of 85 even. So what we found, or at least this the survey is suggesting, is that perhaps producers are not just going to switch, but perhaps they're exaggerating that planned switch based on recent fertilizer cost.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, we always harken back to urea.
Josh Linville is vice president of fertilizer with StoneX, says there's no backup options.
When you look at Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, those three countries combined for 13.5 million tons of urea exports. We don't have that extra production around the world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist. And it's just those three countries, right? Now, all of a sudden, if you start to bring in some of the other countries we're talking about that are relying on that gas, no. And that's been the issue with this. This is not a price mechanism. This is a supply situation. And this is where we can kind of get caught up. People like to compare it to 2008, 2012 and say, well, back then the prices went up and it shot right back down just as quick as it went up. Those were demand-driven markets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were completely different. This is a supply-driven marketplace. Fundamentally different. It's incredibly important to remember that when you look at these markets.
So how can urea be trading at a discount?
Here recently, we've been seeing North Africa selling above $700 a ton. We've seen Middle East urea futures trading at $725. When you take that price and you put on vessel freight, which is very high today with all the problems we see around the world, mm-hmm. convert it to short ton, do the DT, shrink interest, all the things, that turns into a 730 loaded null urea barge, short ton USD.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday, physical barges were trading for $642 a ton. Yeah, it's a massive discount. And I don't know, because the only thing I can come to is A, I think there is a big fear of massive demand destruction. We see a situation where all the fertilized, well, everything except for potash, prices have gone sky high. And yet grain prices continue to suffer. And I think the market to a certain extent is probably scared. If we take this price up much more, we're going to lose a lot of corn acres. We're going to lose a lot of demand. And we're going to do more damage than good. I think that's one part of it. Number two, when you look at what our end goal is for imports, we think that we need about 5.1 million tons this fertilized year, July 1 the last year to June 30 of this year.
Okay.
Between the U.S. Commerce Department import data, July through January, and then some vessel tracking that we do for February, March, mm-hmm. April, May is not a big 2-month period. It's our biggest months, but we really don't need a whole lot to hit that 5.1 million ton goal. And so the U.S. market might be sitting there saying, listen, we've got a lot coming. We think between what's already coming and what we know is coming from a contractual basis, we're perfectly fine. And our being a discount is our way of saying, put the brakes on. We don't need it. The discount we are, though, not only do we need to worry about a lot of those March barges heading this direction, getting turned away for better markets, higher netbacks than the U.S., which it can be done. It's an expensive situation. You can absolutely turn a vessel around, or we might actually start having a conversation that somebody might try to start exporting these barges, buy up a bunch of them on the river, put them onto a vessel, and re-export. We saw this happen with phosphate a couple weeks ago, which, again, blew our mind. We cannot comprehend how in the world this is happening, but this is how cheap the North American market is. People are able to have the conversation that we might just start buying up the physical product, export it to the rest of the world.
And he admits the market needs a correction.
The market's got to fix itself. And this is what we're watching. One of two things needs to happen, right? Either the global market needs to fall substantially or the NOLA market needs to rise substantially or some combination of the two. That gap is not make sense for this time of year, especially moving into the spring season. So it's a head scratcher. I wish I had some great insight onto it as to why. I don't. All I can do is turn the attention to it. And I know North America farmers might be listening to this and saying, Josh, there's nothing cheap about it. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. Trust me, I'm not saying any of this stuff is cheap. I've got to still talk to my family as well, and they're letting me know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when we look at our own price versus the rest of the world, something is not right. We are cheap versus the world.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
The U.S. economy has been expanding at a solid pace. While job gains have remained low, the unemployment rate has been little changed in recent months, and inflation remains somewhat elevated. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy rate unchanged. We see the current stance of monetary policy as appropriate to promote progress toward our maximum employment and 2% inflation goals. The implications of developments in the Middle East for the U.S. economy are uncertain. We will remain attentive to risks to both sides of our dual mandate. And I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments. Available indicators suggest that economic activity has been expanding at a solid pace. Consumer spending has been resilient, and business fixed investment has continued to expand. In contrast, activity in the housing sector has remained weak. In our summary of economic projections, the median participant projects that real GDP will rise 2.4% this year and 2.3% next year, somewhat stronger than projected in December. In the labor market, the unemployment rate was 4.4% in February and has changed little since late last summer. Job gains have remained low. A good part of the slowing in the pace of job growth over the past year reflects a decline in the growth of the labor force due to lower immigration and labor force participation, though labor demand has clearly softened as well. Other indicators, including job openings, layoffs, hiring, and nominal wage growth, generally show little change in recent months. In our SEP, the median projection of the unemployment rate is 4.4% at the end of this year and edges down thereafter. Inflation has eased significantly from its highs in mid-2022, but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.8% over the 12 months ending in February, and that excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 3.0%. These elevated readings largely reflect inflation in the goods sector, which has been boosted by the effects of tariffs. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have risen in recent weeks, likely reflecting the substantial rise in oil prices caused by the supply disruptions in the Middle East. Most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation this year is 2.7% and 2.2% next year, a bit higher than projected in December. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. At today's meeting, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 3.5% to 3.75%. From last September through December, we lowered our policy rate 0.75 percentage point, bringing it within a range of plausible estimates of neutral. This normalization of our policy stance should continue to help stabilize the labor market while allowing inflation to resume its downward trend toward 2%. But the implications of events in the Middle East for the U.S. economy are uncertain. In the near term, higher energy prices will push up overall inflation, but it is too soon to know the scope and duration of the potential effects on the economy.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
During the first several days of this, you know, we all woke up Saturday morning over here at least, and woke up to the news that we had struck Iran. And all of a sudden, it's immediate, like, well, okay, we're going to lose the Strait of Hormuz to the traffic.
Josh Linville is Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
The thought process during at least the first several days was, if this can come to a quick conclusion, we'll lose some shipping days. Yes, it's going to elevate the price. However, you get into the second half of the week, you start to get towards Tuesday evening into Wednesday, there started to be a shift. Now, all of a sudden, we're starting to go from, well, we're just losing shipping days, to these plants might have to shut down. There's only a finite amount of storage. The inputs might have to start slowing down, stopping. Now, all of a sudden, we're starting to entering the realm of actual supply losses. That hurts more, especially during this time of year, start of week, you know, the second week. Now, we're starting to see major issues, more production downtime, even more shipping that was lost. Now, all of a sudden, we're losing a big chunk of that spring shipping window, the most important time of the year that we have for fertilizer, trying to prepare for the spring season. Now we're on the verge of starting week three. And now, as you start to look at it, the best way I can describe it, it's, I know it's a kind of a fundamental way of looking at it, it's the tentacles of the story are starting to spread out. Mm-hmm. We've been focused on, what does it mean for the Persian Gulf? What does it mean for 3 of the 10 biggest urea exporters, 3 of the 10 biggest anhydrous exporters, 1 of the top 5 phosphate exporters? Now think outside of that. Think of the LNG that's not being shipped outside of the Strait of Hormuz. The reason that's important is a lot of that goes into countries like India, for example, mm-hmm. who need that gas to feed their nitrogen production facilities to produce that domestic urea that they have built over the years that they're very, very reliant on. That's a major situation. That's not just India, right? It's different countries. And it's not just that. Think about the anhydrous. Again, 3 of the top 10 exporters in the world sit behind there in the Persian Gulf. They're not shipping right now. One of the 2 biggest inputs for variable cost inputs for phosphate production, it's anhydrous. Mm-hmm. Number 2 variable cost input is sulfur. Guess where a lot of that sulfur comes from? The Persian Gulf, the oil producing country. So now all of a sudden we're starting to see a situation where it's not just contained to the Persian Gulf. Yeah. Now we're starting to have very real conversations of production losses moving outside it. Now it's turning into a global thing and it's affecting nitrogen production and phosphate production. So just trying to keep our hands wrapped around it. It's never about the first layer of the story. It's the second, it's the third, it's the fourth, and we're starting to get into those later stages, and now this is going to start having very, very big impacts on the marketplace.
But the U.S. isn't the only player at this table.
Typically speaking, when India steps into the marketplace for a purchase tender, they're usually looking for like 1 to 1.5 million tons. Sometimes they look for 2. It's a very bullish thing. The way India purchases, I don't want to say it's antiquated. It works. But it worked better in the past tense. Yeah. It worked when the global urea market had extra supply. Because when you had somebody stepping up saying, I need a million, million and a half, everybody in the world's like, oh my gosh, I got to make sure I sell these guys. It's a massive opportunity to sell a bunch of tons in a short amount of time. Well, now all of a sudden the world doesn't have that excess capability.
Yeah.
So when they step in, the market gets hot. And here's a problem with India. They had just locked up 1.3 million ton on their last tender. 800,000 tons of those awards were going to West Coast ports.
Where
a lot of those tons probably originated. Yeah, they probably originated from Middle East manufacturers mm-hmm. who cannot ship now. So now all of a sudden that's getting delayed. You'd put that on top of the fact that their own production is suffering. We've been hearing production rates could be as far down as like 70% normal, if not worsening from that point. So we had not expected to see India back in the marketplace. There's a lot of talk that we could see them this month, early next month. And if they step in and this situation's still going, that's a thing that could superheat this market. We have not seen the highest price if India stepped back in.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
The China Transformational Exports Program, or CTAP, has made important progress in countering China's export subsidies globally. However, during the last fiscal year, CTAP's allocation decreased substantially. Can you share how the bank can bolster the usage and effectiveness of this important program?
At a recent House Financial Services Subcommittee hearing, Oklahoma's Frank Lucas with John Jovanovic, chair of the Export-Import Bank.
I think the most important piece, Congressman, was to ensure that CTEP was at the heart of everything that we did. And so I think, as I mentioned a moment ago, I actually brought CTEP and its key team and integrated it within all of our origination and business development activities. So it was absolutely crazy to me to think about a CTEP team operating independently from all of the high-quality individuals who assess and look to bring in our largest transactions. And so integrating them was important, thinking about how the 10 transformational areas apply to existing initiatives, and finally prioritizing opportunities where we could check multiple boxes and ensure that supply chain security, by the way, energy security, all of these points really touch on CTEP.
Similarly, I want to follow up on the bank's 2025 competitiveness report. That report states that the bank is basically not competitive in medium and long-term lending export finance arena. How are you planning to for a course correction, and what are the ways Congress can assist you in that effort?
Supporting exactly what we're trying to do with regards to high-grading the organization. So part of the reason why the bank has not been competitive in recent past is it's been pretty inefficient, sir. And it hasn't actually thought about all the ways to actually optimize its internal process. There were silos of communication that we've broken down. Teams weren't accountable for what they were doing, and there weren't clear KPIs. So with the strategic prioritization, with better communication, with more visibility and accountability on what people need to accomplish, I'm confident that the bank is going to continue to become more competitive. And what would be really helpful is ensuring and sending a very strong signal to the market that we're reauthorizing the bank and that we're able to continue to do what we do.
Let's discuss the renewable energy mandate. I'm of the mind that an all-of-the-above approach to energy dominance may be the most appropriate thing to do. How would giving the bank more flexibility when it comes to U.S. energy exports benefit domestic jobs and national security?
What we've done very aggressively, sir, is we've thought about energy molecules as an export akin to a piece of equipment or a technology or a manufactured good. And so we've started to use the same export credit guarantee tools and facilities to help open up markets where, for the first time ever, American molecules are reaching the shores of brand new customers, directly displacing some of our adversaries. And so we view exporting American molecules as key to not just facilitating energy security for our allies, but to really building those concrete ties that bind and ensuring that America remains as competitive as possible.
In 2024, the bank was rated last among all federal agencies regarding workplace culture. How are you working to improve the environment for staff so that the bank can be competitive in recruiting and retaining expert employees?
I think the number one way to address it, sir, everybody wants to win. They want to know what a win looks like. And if you don't have key strategic priorities, if they're not robust, if they're not needle moving, it's really hard to come to work every day and feel as though you're making an impact. So the strategic prioritization of the bank has been important, ensuring that we have the right resources. But again, what people also hate is when they feel as though they've spent a lot of time on something that goes nowhere.
I've long been a supporter of the bank and its mission to help Americans compete against foreign exports. We must work together to address some of these challenges so that it can continue to be an effective tool.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.